1330 WEVY, Milton, Pensacola, Gulf Breeze, Northwest Florida's talk radio.
From Saigon, this is the American Forces Vietnam Network, presenting Million Dollar Music for the Aquarian Age.
3.4 million Americans served in Vietnam and the surrounding theater during the war. Some volunteered, some were drafted. They came from all 50 states. They were different races, different religions. They liked different sports teams. But there were two things that every serviceman shared. They wore the uniform of the United States military, and they listened to the American Forces Vietnam Network on the radio. This broadcast on 1330 AM WEBY tells the real story of radio in Vietnam. Join us as we honor our Vietnam veterans and share the untold story of the American Forces Vietnam Network and those who served.
AFBN Audio 85.
Da Nang.
Go! Vietnam.
Marine Sergeant Harry Simons was stationed at both AFVN Saigon and AFVN Da Nang from 1967 through 1969. He provided WEBY with many hours of studio tape recordings of his rock and roll music programs, as well as those of other AFVN personalities. These have not been heard since they were originally broadcast in Vietnam nearly 50 years ago.
AFBN worldwide news coverage, heard every hour on the hour.
For the Americans in the rice paddies, jungles, military bases, hospitals, and cities of Southeast Asia, AFBN was there. Even in the skies and on the sea, all it took was a turn of a knob, and the sounds of war were replaced with the sounds of home.
AFBN Channel 56.
Play who?
Chicken Man!
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
This is not a typical documentary about the Vietnam War. This is not about the sound of helicopters or machine guns or explosions. This isn't about the sound of the war itself. It's about the soundtrack of the war. AFBN was heard everywhere. On bases, in hooches, in trucks, aboard ships, in cockpits, and even in the fields of battle. Wherever Americans were, AFBN accompanied them. AFBN was a universal element of the Vietnam experience as it delivered the critical sounds of home to the men and women who were thousands of miles from home. This is that story. This is AFBN, the GI's Companion. This special tribute program is proudly sponsored by Gulf Power, Penn Air Federal Credit Union, The Retirement Planners, Milton Dodge, and Joe Patty Seafood.
AFBN Channel 93.
Hi, love. Welcome once again to Another Date with Chris. And this is Chris Noel doing the welcoming.
You've heard the music often. It's what's between the music that is so unique. So we have shortened the songs to fit more of the AFBN programs into this documentary. Let's now turn back the calendar. Let's now go halfway around the world. Let's now listen to the American Forces Vietnam Network.
Phase number two, Marine Corporal Harry Simons with you.
Hot town, summer in the city. Back of my neck getting dirty and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead. Walking on the sidewalk harder than a match.
evening. This is Sportscope for Game 6. Showers predicted, but it's not expected to be raining by game time at Busch Memorial Stadium. Ray Washburn for the Cardinal, who lead 3-2 over Detroit, who are expected to toss either Earl Wilson or Joe Sparmo or possibly Denny McLain. Game time here in country, 0145 hours tomorrow morning. AFN Radio Sports, of course, will carry the game live and direct, as is the policy. Mighty Mickey Mantle said he'll be back for one more crack at it next year. He made his comments at a news conference in Longview, Texas, today. The top three teams are identical in both the United Press International and Associated Press Collegiate polls this week. Top-ranked Purdue, second-ranked Southern Cal, and third-ranked Penn State. After that, a bit of confusion. Fourth, Kansas and the UPI, Ohio State and AP. Fifth, Notre Dame and both. Idle Nebraska, sixth in the UPI, Kansas in the AP. Seventh position went to Ohio State, UPI, Florida in the AP. Eighth to LSU in the UPI and AP, which is same-same. Ninth to Nebraska in the AP, Florida in the UPI. Houston, 10th in the United Press International poll, Tennessee in the AP. That's 30 from Sportsco.
AFN, it's what's happening.
Welcome back. Go phase number two. It's 2016 here. Marine Corporal Harry Simon socking the sounds to you for a groovy, groovy Wednesday evening. Number 9, October 1968. Sound power here, baby. We're going to slip away with Mr. Clarence Carter now. Having a groovy time. Look out, people.
What would I give? For just a few moments, what would I give just to have you near? I need you so. Oh, can you slip away, baby? I'd like to see you right now, darling.
That's number 10 on that powerful power pull playlist here from AFN. 2019. Believe it or not, Clarence Carter has got a million seller on his hands already with Sleep Away Baby. Like I say, people, we're having button problems tonight, you know.
Webster defines the word new as something not in existence for a long time. AFBN defines Panorama as a program incorporating new features, new ideas, and a new time. Saturdays from 1500 till 2100. What's new? Listen for the new Panorama beginning Saturday, October 19th, and find out.
The radio program here, any way you want to say it, but it got number 9 October, a groovy Wednesday.
American Voices,
it's what's happening for you. Turn it on, baby.
Don't bother crying, don't bother crawling, it's all over now. No use in stalling. The love I once felt, I don't feel anymore for you. This time I'll even open the door for you.
Where were you when I needed you? Where?
'66 with the Grassroots, sound power at 2023.
Be listening on October 14 when country and western music goes mod. AFVN's new country show called Town and Country is what we call chicken kickin' music. Listen evenings at 19:05 for AFVN's new mod C&W show, Town and Country, starting Monday, October 14.
Thank you.
perfect combination. Stateside music and you.
Rick Bednar served in Vietnam with the United States Army and was one of many who served with the American Forces Vietnam Network. Rick Bednar, when did you serve in the Army?
Well, I was in for 3 years. I signed up for 3 years to hopefully have some kind of say over what I was going to do in the Army. And I did end up in Armed Forces Broadcasting in Vietnam. And then I had a year left to go when I came back to the States. I was out at Fort Lewis, Washington with the public information office out there. But my real broadcasting time was that year spent in Vietnam.
And what city was that in Vietnam?
I was at the AFEN network headquarters in Saigon for a year.
Did you have prior broadcasting or journalist experience before going into the Army?
Yes, I graduated from the University of Illinois with a bachelor's in communications, and I had actually worked in radio since about junior high school age, and had done disc jockey work on the air. And then I got a job my senior year at the University of Illinois. I got a job at a CBS station here, Channel 3, and I was the morning news weatherman, and then substituted as a weatherman on the weekends on the evening news. So I had, yes, I had quite a few years of broadcast kind of under my belt when I went into the service, and then I was able to get into, fortunately, get into the Armed Forces Defense Information School at Fort Benjamin Harrison, and they had a course in both journalism and broadcasting, so I was able to graduate from that. And then at that time, it was mostly a case of everyone knew they were probably going to Vietnam, and that's where I did end up. But I was very fortunate to get a job at AFEN in Saigon.
How critical was your prior experience in getting that assignment?
Well, it certainly helped. When I got to Vietnam, my assignment was with PSYOPs, and I knew that it wasn't broadcasting. So I went out, I found out where AFEN was, and I went out there, and I met with the CO. He was a naval officer. Wentz was his last name. I think James Wentz. And I met with him in his office, and I said, look, I've got these orders for PSYOPs, but I have quite a few years of broadcasting under my belt. Do you have any openings or any way to get switched my orders? And that was when I started doing an FM local afternoon shift on the FM signal, which was only in the area. And then I was fortunate to have a country music show called Town and Country on the network in the evening. I didn't realize how popular country music was until I had this program on the network in the evening. And it was, of course, 2 hours, and I started out, for some reason I came up with the idea of doing a request portion of the 2 hours, and I think I started out at 15 minutes or 30 minutes, and I said, please, you know, mail in, and of course that was the days of mail, real, actual mail, not email, you know, mail in your requests for your wife back home, or your sister back home, or your girlfriend back home, or whatever, and I started out 15 minutes or half an hour of the 2 hours being requests, and I'd, you know, read the names on the air. Here's a request from Army Sergeant such and such for his wife so and so in Portland, Oregon, or whatever. And I found out so quickly how popular country music was and how many people were apparently listening to this program, because I was overwhelmed with mail, and I quickly switched from half an hour to an hour, and even then I got behind. I heard from Navy guys on ships at sea. I heard from Army and Marine Corps guys out in foxholes. And then I got phone calls or mail from guys I'd been in college with here at the University of Illinois, who I hadn't, you know, seen in several years, and all of a sudden, and I didn't know they were in Vietnam, and they didn't know I was in Vietnam. They happened to hear me on the air, and you know, they said it was nice because of like a voice from home. I also got mail from Vietnamese who liked U.S. country music.
So if a GI writes in requesting a song be dedicated to his wife or girlfriend back in the States, she clearly didn't hear it. Hopefully he did. Did you ever hear back from the guys who requested songs?
Once in a long while I would. Yeah, once in a long while I would. But not very often. So you just hoped that they were listening, you know, at the time when the song was played.
Did you hear from the guys out in the field with letters or phone calls that weren't requests? They just were comments about what having AFVN accompanying them in the field meant.
Yes, and I think that's why I entitled my article that I wrote about broadcasting in Vietnam that appeared in Radio World magazine, A Voice from Home. When I would get a letter like that, it would be some guy in a foxhole or a naval ship at sea saying, thanks so much for bringing a touch of home to us. And yes, once in a while I would get a letter like that, which with a compliment, which really made you feel good.
What'd you do in your downtime?
There wasn't a lot of downtime because they pretty much kept you busy, and of course the time moved faster when you were busy rather than you were back sitting in your room trying to pass time until your next shift at the station.
Army Specialist Rick Bednar, thank you for your service. Rick Bednar, like so many of the personnel who served at AFVN, has no recordings of his town and country program. But we do have a tape of the Town and Country Show hosted by Air Force Technical Sergeant Don Cotterell, who was stationed at AFVN in 1972 and 1973. Let's give it a listen.
I'll tell you a story it's all about. This job I had one time as a town scout. Well, chauffeur, chauffeur, I always say. There's a Tupelo, Mississippi, whoever heard of it. Why, I'll kill the boy.
Hey, there you go. That was a Tupelo, Mississippi flash getting things going here. That was Jerry Reed, Air Force Sergeant Don Cotterell, and this is the Town and Country Radio Show. It's already 14 and a half minutes after 4 o'clock, and we've got to get some music played for you, so you stay with us. Music just like his. Hey, all right, Conway Twitty just called 47 Pigs right in here to the studios. That was White Lightning. Conway Twitty singing it for you right here on the Town and Country Radio Show.
The listening is perfect when you tune in to the old Stump Jumpers Town and Country Pickings. And this is Willie Nelson wishing I were there right now.
Thank you, Willie Nelson. We're going to play a song by a couple of your friends, Buck Owens and Susan Ray. And this goes out to all the Minois here in Vietnam.
You're gone with me. Go ahead, walk me long before it's prime time.
Hey, there you go. That was a song Buck Owens wrote himself. That was Buck Owens and Susan Ray singing it for you, the Minois Tearjerker, and it was called Crying Time. It's 21 minutes after 4 o'clock. This is the Town and Country Radio Show, and just about time for us to get some chores done, folks. Well, we have three movie theaters left on the circuit, so let's talk about them. Tonsonu Theater number 2, Come Back, Charleston Blue, rated PG, Godfrey Cambridge, and Raymond St. Jacques, along with Peter DeAnda. At the MacV compound, it's Salzburg Connection, rated PG, Barry Newman, and Anita Carina. And the last one, it's way up north, Da Nang Theater number 2, Lady Sings the Blues. It's a restricted movie with Diana Ross and Billy D. Williams. Well, I'll tell you what, folks. Going to tell you a little bit about some country and western music. You know, we've got tearjerkers about everything in the country and western field. We've got tearjerkers about women, tearjerkers about men, tearjerkers about dogs, horses, places, children, just about anything you can think about. And then just a while back, I played you a song. Matter of fact, I played it yesterday. It's a tearjerker to a building. Goodbye, dear old Ryman, and that's the home of the Grand Ole Opry, and Hank Locklin did that for us. Well, I just dug up another tearjerker to another building. This is the one that's generally found about 50 yards from the back door, and it gets turned over a lot, especially around Halloween time, and sometimes called the catalog cabin. If you haven't guessed what it is, listen here.
They passed an ordinance in the town. They said we'd have to tear it down. That little old shack out back is so dear to me. Don't let them tear that dear old building down, for there's not another like it in the country or the town.
Hey, there you go. That was Billy Adwheeler with an ode to another building, and that was the ode to the little old shack out back. It's 25 minutes after 4, Town and Country Radio, Air Force Sergeant Don Cotterell here spinning the records for you from the Minoy capital of the world here at beautiful, sunny, seductive Saigon City.
Delta John, what's that flower you have on? Could it be a faded rose from days gone by?
Hey, all right. That was Jody Miller and a song called Delta Dawn. Did you get the title? Well, if you listened to the song, you certainly got the title. Anyway, that was Jody Miller singing it for you right here on the Town and Country Radio Show at 28 and a half minutes after 4 o'clock. Air Force Sergeant Don Cotterell here playing the records for you, and we've got a request going on right about now. And this goes out to our squid representation down there in Canto. Yeah, he's the one that we call the Mekong Delta Queen. Shouldn't have said that. But anyway, his name's Paul Long, and he wants to hear a song that really brings memories of home back to him. It's called The Old Dead Skunk. And if you listen to it, it can bring some memories back to you if you've ever hit a skunk in your car. Do stink, don't it?
Crossing the highway late last night. He should have looked left and he should have looked right. He didn't see the station wagon car. The skunk got squashed and there you are. You got your dead skunk in the middle of the road.
Hey, that was London Wainwright III. Well, he's just about up with George Hamilton IV, huh? Oh, that was kind of sick, but that went out to our squid spark chaser down there in Canto, and he just said he wanted to hear it because he kind of liked the old song.
More music
from Saigon. This is the American Forces Vietnam Network, where the hits just keep on coming.
50 power!
Here's Dickie Lee now with Sparkling Brown Eyes, a real oldie.
There's a ramshackle shack.
There's a ramshackle shack.
In old Carolina. My sparkling brown eyes.
Hey, there's some tight harmony for you, huh? That was Dickie Lee, and Sparkling Brown Eyes are a real old country and western tune, but he brought it up today with a little modern production. And talking about some tight harmony, well, there's a pair around here. Her name's Amanda and Hal. Well, Amanda, I hope we've got your lovely ears just hanging on a radio speaker out there, because Hal wants to play a song for you and it's some more good tight harmony by the Wilburn Brothers, and we think it just may apply. It's Something About You. All right.
Now there's something about you, baby. Something that drives me crazy. Something I can't quit dreaming of. Something about you that I love.
Hey, okay, that was the Wilburn Brothers, Something About You, and that was all for you, Amanda. Hope you enjoyed your song, and that was from Hal, right here on the Town and Country Radio Show. Hope you liked it. Did you? You say you did. All right, sweetheart. You can get a song from us anytime right here on the Town and Country Radio Show. 22 minutes until 5 o'clock, and we're going to make another request, one for Chief Bush. And he's supposedly the biggest butterfly in all of Saigon, okay? Well, here you go, Chief Bush. We understand you like Johnny Cash, and so do we.
I dedicate this song to the working man. For everything.
every man that puts in 8 or 10 hard hours a day of working toil and sweat has always got somebody looking down his neck, trying to get more out of him than he really ought to have to put in. What time is it? 4:30. Hey, Oni, Oni.
All right, he's going to get him. He's going to get him some muscle there. That was Johnny Cash and Oni, and that went out to Chief Bush, the biggest, the great big, biggest butterfly in all of Saigon, Vietnam. Well, Chief Bush, hope you enjoyed your song, but Lee Sturtevant and I were talking last night about you and how you butterfly around, and we come up with one answer. It's not love, my friend, but it's not bad.
She was always there each time I needed you, holding on to me like I held on to you. No, it's not love, but it's not bad.
Oh, the power of rationalization the human male goes through. Well, if we didn't have it, it'd sure be a boring world, wouldn't it? It's not love, but it's not bad, and that was Merle Haggard. 15 minutes until 5 o'clock here on the Town and Country Radio Show, where you got friendly folks.
Right here, and singing our song just for you on American Forces Radio. Friendly people.
Oh, walking over here in the old Namaru is just a big old blast, isn't it? The sun beats down on you, the skeeters start biting, you start sweating, you're worried if you're taking your malaria pill or not, and if you did take your malaria pill, you got to get somewhere in a hurry, your temper gets frayed around the edges, little things turn out to be big things. Now, isn't that fun? Mm-mm, no, it isn't. And when you have sore feet, that isn't fun either. If your little toes could talk, they'd say, oh, goodness, love me, dry your feet. Change those socks often and rotate your shoes and boots and treat your feet like they belong to you, Leroy, because they do. There's the pedal digit right on the end of your leg. Hey, let's move along instrumentally now with Jimmy Bryant and 400 Buckboard.
Navy Petty Officer Joe C. Oaken was assigned to AFVN as a newsman. Joe, welcome.
Thank you.
Joe, what did you do in Vietnam?
Yeah, when I got to Saigon in August of 1967, they assigned me to the news department, and I worked the evening shift from 6 p.m. to midnight. I was the anchor for radio news at night, and we did news on the hour and then a 15-minute newscast at 11.
Did you have prior news or broadcasting experience prior to going to Southeast Asia?
Oh, yeah. I got my journalist broadcaster NEC, we call it, our job code, in 1959 while I was stationed at Lakehurst, New Jersey. And my next assignment was the Caribbean Forces Network in Panama. And so I went from DJ to news anchor down there.
Where were you billeted in Saigon?
In Saigon, we had an Army contract hotel called the Kisan Annex, right in the heart of Saigon.
Were they pretty nice accommodations?
They were reasonable.
Understood.
Yeah, they were two-man rooms with army cots.
How far away from the studios of AFVN was the hotel where you were billeted?
Let's see. It's hard to gauge that. It took us about 10, 15 minutes, depending, to get to the station. The station was near the U.S. Embassy in Saigon.
And how'd you get back and forth?
Well, until they start shooting at us. We used to take pedicabs or cyclos, and then, once the shooting started, they started picking us up in military buses.
So when you were working in the radio station at Saigon, were your newscasts broadcast top of the hour on the entire network or only in Saigon?
No, we were the network feed.
How'd you gather your news for AFVN?
Well, usually off the wire. You know, we had access to UPI and AP wires. And we would just insert our military news. You know, it was given to us by MACV. The Military Assistance Command.
Those wire services for broadcast could be rip and read. They're written in that sentence structure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct.
Did you rip and read, or did you rewrite your stories?
It depends. I would write it for my style, rewrite it, and but mostly we used it as is. It was easy to do.
What kind of guidance were you given on the content of your news? What did you consider newsworthy?
You know, it attended the same briefings that the civilian media attended, popularly called the 5 o'clock follies. Although 5 o'clock was the ARVN, our Vietnamese briefing, and then we went over to one of the hotels where we got the MACV feed, and they contained all the reports from the different services that were in Vietnam at the time, Army, Air Force, Marines, Navy, and we compiled our news from that.
Was the news selection based on your judgment or the judgment of your superiors at the radio station?
No, it was totally mine.
Did you have pretty significant autonomy? Sounds like
it. I think so. You have to remember that when I got to Saigon, I was already a seasoned Navy journalist, and so I knew the company line by heart, and I kind of followed that kind of format, that kind of intuition about what I figured would be acceptable and you know, what not.
What was that company line?
To do no harm. To get as much out as we could, just to break even with the civilian media, to get our story out, our side of the story out. And that's what I intended to do, to highlight the troops and their actions without compromising security.
Was your news censored in any way?
Not that I was aware of. You know, nobody ever called me and said, you should do this, you should do that. Our news director, our department head, was a Marine Master Sergeant, and my immediate supervisor, the news director, was an Army Staff Sergeant who served in the 1st Cav before he came to Saigon. So I didn't feel intimidated by any of these guys. They kind of realized you know, my experience and just let me run.
Did you spend any time out in the field gathering news?
Oh, yeah. In the mornings, that's what we did. I went out with an Army photographer, and you know, we just went wherever the action was going to be, and sometimes we hopped on a helicopter and went out, covered the battle scene or whatever, got as close as we could without endangering ourselves.
Joe, when you traveled out into the field of battle as close as you could get, and you would accomplish getting a news story and also picture documentation, mm-hmm. did you ever share any of that with the civilian media?
No, that was not our job. It was the job of the public affairs officers for the Military Assistance Command.
Joe, was the newscast given on AFVN in Vietnam ever used for propaganda purposes? And by that I mean misinformation to the enemy, not our troops.
No, we were never, you know, used in that way.
Joe Siokin, thank you for your service.
You bet.
Hang on, baby.
Girl, you really got me going. You got me so I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, you really got me now. You got me so I can't sleep at night.
Oh, yeah.
'64 in the Kinks. Hey, baby, you really got me now. 2012, Go Phase number 2. Baby, come on back.
This is Sports Scope. The Tigers really roared today, trouncing the defending champion St. Louis Cardinals by a very one-sided 13-1. In the big third inning, the Tigers scored 10 big runs and tied 6 individual and 3 club World Series marks. Denny McClain finally got his first series win, pitching a strong 9-hitter. Ray Washburn of the Cards lost his first one in this series, and the Redbirds went through 4 pitchers in the third inning. This also tied a series record. Tomorrow, the big one. And taking the mound for Detroit, Mickey Lolich. For the Cardinals, Big Bob Gibson. Neither have lost a game in this series. In football, first in the NFL, the Vikings' Bill Brown is the leading scorer thus far this season with 48 points. Fran Tarkenton of the Giants is the top passer with 46 completions in 80 attempts, and Gale Sayers is the leading rusher with 361 yards in 58 carries. In the rival AFL, the Oakland Raiders, unbeaten so far this season, leads the league in offense with an average of over 427 yards per game. The Chargers lead in defense with 252 yards yielded per game. Mike Hafter, rookie flanker for the Denver Broncos, is the Associated Press's Offensive Player of the Week. Hafter has only caught three passes as a professional, all three in the game last weekend against Cincinnati. In fact, he caught the winning touchdown in that game with only 2 minutes to go in the game. More football statistics, this time in collegiate action. Eugene Mercury Morris of West Texas State is the leading collegiate rusher. He has 884 yards in four games, averaging 221 yards a game. He is also the leading scorer with 66 points on 11 touchdowns. Purdue, ranked number one in both AP and UPI polls, meets their first big test since Notre Dame this weekend when they go against Ohio State. In golf, Arnold Palmer and Gary Player are co-favorites to win Great Britain's Piccadilly Match Play Golf Tourney, starting tomorrow at Wentworth near London. Finally, the entire U.S. Olympic team is now in Mexico City. The team was completed with the arrival of the swimming team yesterday. The games will begin October 12th. And that's Sports Scope from Saigon.
A major part of the American strategy in Vietnam was clearing the dense foliage. This AFEN interview with the commanding officer of the defoliation program aired on the American Forces Vietnam Network.
This is Air Force Sergeant Boyd Lorridge reporting from Da Nang Air Base in the Republic of Vietnam. We're talking to Lieutenant Colonel Philip Larson, commander of the Da Nang Detachment of the 12th Special Operations Squadron. Colonel, what is the mission of the ranch hands?
The mission of the ranch hand is to conduct defoliation missions in South Vietnam.
What are your targets and how do you conduct these missions?
Our targets vary. Primarily, our mission is to open up trails and base camp areas of suspected enemy activity. We do this by contour flying over jungle mountainous terrain, contour flying at about 100 feet above the tops of the trees. In addition, in the I Corps area, we also have a mission to destroy crops that are known enemy crops. We only do this in I Corps.
Sir, what type of aircraft do you fly?
We're flying the UC-123, both the B model and the K model. The B model is a 123, which has two conventional engines. The K model has two conventional engines and, in addition, has two supplemental jet engines, the J-85.
Is it hard to fly this aircraft at the low altitudes that you fly on your missions?
Flying is not hard. It's not difficult either. It is demanding from the pilot standpoint. It requires professional competence and very exacting methods to be able to contour safely and to be able to judge the terrain, to be able to come off the target in a safe manner.
How would you evaluate your organization and your men?
Of course, I'm slightly prejudiced, but I think that we have one of the finest, if not the finest, organization in all of Vietnam. And of the men, I've been constantly surprised, pleasantly surprised, at the competence of the individuals that we have. The men come from all walks of Air Force life. They have varied experiences. They have come over here to work towards a mission that we have, and they're doing it with a positive approach in a pleasant manner.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us today. We've been talking with Lieutenant Colonel Philip Larson, commander of the Da Nang Detachment of the 12th Special Operations Squadron. We return you to your local station.
Gene Frank flew Huey helicopters in Vietnam on a one-year tour. Gene, when were you there?
I left for Vietnam on January 30th of 1969, and I returned on January 31st of 1970. I served with A Company, 158th Assault Helicopter Battalion, and we were stationed out of Camp Evans, which was approximately halfway between Way and Quang Tri. And I did spend 2 months living up in Quang Tri, flying support for the Marines, the 5th Mechanized, and the units that were up along the DMZ during my tour. I was a chief warrant officer for most of the time I spent in Vietnam, and I flew UH-1H Hueys as an aircraft commander for the 101st Airborne.
And what was the primary mission of that company?
The primary mission of that company was to provide support to the ground troops, and that consisted of combat, assaults, resupply missions, whatever it took to provide the troops on the ground aviation support.
Were you flying Hueys?
I was a UH-1H Huey aircraft commander.
So how much of what you did was transportation, and how much of what you did was assault?
We would alternate days. So one day we flew combat assault. The next day we did combat support missions. So half my time was flying combat assaults, and the other half was usually doing support missions of resupply or movement of troops, mail delivery, etc.
Do you remember listening to American Forces Vietnam Network while in Vietnam?
Oh, my gosh. All the time. It was constantly on the radio and the aircraft, as well as when we were on the ground.
When you were flying listening, was it kind of like cranking up the car stereo cruising down a highway, or was it more formal than that?
Absolutely. Especially if a good rock song came on, we'd crank up the volume. We had an intercom system on the Huey, so all of the crew could listen and talk to each other, and the radio would play over that intercom system. And so whenever a good song came on, especially if I liked it, I'd crank the volume up for everybody.
But that in no way interfered with crew communications or with communications with the base?
Oh, no. We were trained with the ability to actually listen to four different radio channels at the same time. And if anything came up that had a higher priority, we would turn down or turn off some of the other radios. We never turned off the radios, but we would turn them down so that we could always pay attention to what we needed to.
Certainly envision listening to rock and roll music or country music or whatever it may have been going to and fro, but actually engaged in combat. Did you have the radio on then too?
We might turn it down. What we found was we used the radio broadcast and the music as a way of kind of keeping the stress level down, the pucker factor down, as we used to, as we were combat assault. And we would turn it down when we were actually making the assault itself and dropping the troops off. But as soon as we came out of the landing zone, we'd crank the volume usually back up again.
And what do you remember most about something you heard on AFVN?
I can tell you to this day, because I tell the story. July 20th, 1969. I'm flying on a combat assault out to the Ashaw Valley, loaded with troops. We had a four-aircraft assault going on. And as I'm flying out, we've got the radio on, and they announced that the men have landed on the moon. And as I'm listening to this, and I'm about 5 minutes out from doing this combat assault, I'm thinking, I will trade places with him right now.
That's quite a story. When you said the date, I was thinking it's got to be something about the moon landing with Apollo 11. Wow.
Yes.
That had to be pretty surreal.
Absolutely. I mean, it just kind of took me out of the situation and put me into thinking about the men landing on moon and what that took. I was an aeronautical engineering major in college, and so I was always interested in that. But it also showed how your broadcast could take that whole thought process and worry that we might have while we were flying these missions and subdue it, put it behind what was coming over that radio to us.
The radio stations provided great entertainment to the troops, and they provided the sound of home. But there was another aspect of the radio station. It could be used as a direction finder for navigation.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever use it that way, Gene?
Absolutely. Our aircraft had an automatic direction finder on it that would home in on wherever your signal was coming from. In my case, that was Da Nang. So any time that I flew to Da Nang, I was following that needle right into you guys, into Da Nang. And the other times that we would use it would be to help us find our bearings, because I can think of times when we would go out over the ocean to the hospital ship. Sometimes we'd go out there so that the door gunner and the crew chief could test fire their M60 machine guns. And we'd be chasing floating logs or whatever we would see out there. And then I'd look up and I would realize I could not see land. And so I would use the ADF homing in on your station and know that if I flew a 90-degree angle to that, that I would fly back into South Vietnam and not into North Vietnam. So it was used frequently as a means of establishing our locations in Vietnam.
And Harry Simons, in the case of Da Nang, he'd be tuning into 8:50 a.m., right?
Yes, that is correct.
So you've got your automatic direction finder tuned to 850, which is the AFVN signal out of Da Nang. But what was your primary means of navigation? Obviously, we didn't have GPS then. Was this Loran? What did you use as your primary?
Hueys were very similar to World War II aircraft, and they had very limited navigation instrumentation. We had a VOR, we had an ADF, and that was about it. We had no radar, but we primarily used, we flew under visual flight rules, unless we got stuck in the rain or clouds, and then we could fly under instruments. But we had very limited, actual instrumentation. So the ADF was very important to us because it was one of the few things we had that we could use for, navigation aid.
Interesting. I had always thought that that was the backup.
No, that was our primary in the Huey. We listened to whatever the broadcast was that came out of Da Nang.
Mm-hmm. So that being the case, did you fly missions both daytime and nighttime?
Oh, yes.
And you did listen to the AFEN out of Da Nang at night, I would assume.
Yes.
Do you remember your brother?
Oh, boy.
Lighting the fires of I-Cor, this is your brother?
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was me.
Ah, okay.
Not that it makes any difference, but if you were listening to Da Nang, and especially at night, I did a program called The Go Show, and it was all rock and roll,
mm-hmm.
and I called myself your brother, just for the
okay.
hell of it.
Now, was your, just out of curiosity, where was your actual broadcast antenna down at Da Nang?
Down by the airport.
It was right by the Air Force base and the Da Nang airport, right?
I believe that to be correct. To be honest with you, I had only been there twice. At that transmitter location, the studios were up on Monkey Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it was a special occasion that I get an opportunity to be able to jump into the Jeep and take a ride down to the transmitter plant, which I had absolutely nothing to do with in Da Nang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you injured in Vietnam?
I was never injured. I was one of the rare few in my unit that was never injured, wounded, or sent home early, or died as a result of those wounds. And I never quite figured out why I was spared, but I was never wounded while in Vietnam.
Did anything unusual happen to you?
Well, certainly as a helicopter pilot, there are many stories that it could be told. The one thing that I sense that I, to me, is unusual was last year, after 45 years, there was a letter sent into the editor of the Vietnam Helicopter Pilot Association magazine. and some artillery officers had written a letter, and they were looking for the pilot that pulled out some wounded people on their fire base up at Fuller, right along the DMZ border. And all they could remember was the call sign, which was Spider-Man. Well, it turns out that was me. That was my call sign, and I remember doing that mission in November of 69. And I was amazed that after all these years, they were looking for me. And for nothing else than to say thank you for getting their wounded buddies off that fire base and out to the hospital ship when no other medevacs could get in because of the fog and the rain that covered the fire base. And so kind of was my thank you for what I did in Vietnam.
Did you ever have an opportunity to listen to Chicken Man on AFN?
I did hear Chicken Man on the radio, yes.
What do you think of that series?
Well, you have to remember, the only entertainment we had in Vietnam was either an occasional old movie that they would show out in the open, in the company area, and the radio. So we listened to the radio day and night. I mean, that was everybody went out, bought a radio, so that, and we actually built antennas out of coat hangers to try to get better reception up where we were. But that was our form of entertainment. It was our connection to home. It was our entertainment. It was our being able to kind of step away from the war for minutes or moments or whatever we were able to do. And during the entire year, we had that as a means of kind of lowering that stress that you can get involved with, because there really wasn't any other way to do it, and other than to drink in the club or go on R&R for a couple of weeks during the whole year. But your radio broadcasts were there for us for that entire year, and I can't thank you enough.
Well, for the record, I was born in 65 and was not in Vietnam, but Harry, that's directed at you, and it sounds genuine.
And you are very welcome. We had a mission at AFEN, and you've already described it perfectly. The AFEN people were dedicated to improving morale of the Americans in South Vietnam and did everything that we could possibly do to make that happen. And there were so many, many people that contributed to that effort within the American Forces Vietnam Network. And it wasn't just disc jockeys, and it wasn't just music. You know, we had news, and we had sports, and we had engineering challenges that were unbelievable to be able to even build the facilities to broadcast throughout Vietnam. And there were a lot of sacrifices, especially in Hue. You may have known about that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Teta 68.
That's correct. So again, you're welcome. I was in the Marine Corps and understand the sacrifices that were made by millions of people that served in Vietnam. So thank you again.
Well, thank you, and you guys did a great job.
Gene, thank you for your service.
Now, another exciting episode in the life of the most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
Chicken Man!
He's everywhere!
The office of the police commissioner of Midland City.
Hello.
This is your police commissioner speaking.
Right.
Attention, please.
Go ahead.
Now hear this.
Right.
Now hear this.
I'm listening.
The world.
Tell me.
It's about to be destroyed by the most diabolical.
Yes.
That's it.
Oh.
All right, I'll try and contact the only man for the job.
No time for that. Just call the Winged Warrior.
Okay.
Use the chicken emergency procedure.
Couldn't I just use the telephone?
Miss Helfinger, this is big league stuff we've got here.
Of course.
We're not dealing with a parking meter violation.
I understand.
The world is about to go bang bang.
I'll use the chicken emergency procedure.
Let's play ball.
Fine.
Let's get the road on the show.
The commissioner's attractive secretary goes immediately to a large filing cabinet in her office and quickly opening the top drawer to an emergency chicken, removes an emergency chicken. At the very same moment, the commissioner enters his attractive secretary's attractive office and saying,
"This is really a nice office."
Takes in his arms the struggling emergency chicken, saying at the same time,
"Hold still, this is an emergency."
The chicken, of course, obeys immediately, thus permitting Miss Helfinger to tie onto the fowl's scrawny neck a very large banner that reads,
"Call the office right away."
Immediately followed by the commissioner taking the bird to the office window, where, pointing out, he speaks gently the words,
"O soaring symbol of all that's free, wing this message for mankind and me. O fragile friend of skies and space, ruffle your feathers and set the pace. Out the window, forget the door, and quote the commissioner evermore."
Commissioner.
Yes.
Don't you think you should open the window?
And several days later, a yellow telephone on Miss Helfinger's knotty pine desk comes alive.
Hello.
Miss Helfinger, this is the Winged Warrior.
Oh, yes, Speedy.
I received your message this day.
Right.
From a very dirty chicken.
The commissioner said to tell you the world is about to be destroyed by a very diabolical, and he'd like you to come right away and stop it from happening.
Right away?
Yes.
Couldn't I come over tomorrow?
Why tomorrow?
Because I've got to take a basket to my grandmother's house right now.
Well, if Chicken Man doesn't get right over there, who's going to save the world from its big, bad problem? And speaking of Big Bad, who among us is willing to bet that Chicken Man on his way to Grandmother's doesn't meet the Big Bad Diabolical? Be listening tomorrow for another exciting episode in the life of the most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
Chicken Man!
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
This is AFVN, the GI's Companion, a special presentation of 1330 WEBY, Milton, Pensacola, Gulf Breeze, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. This tribute to our Vietnam veterans is proudly sponsored by Penn Air Federal Credit Union, Milton Dodge, Joe Patty Seafood, Gulf Power, and the Retirement Planners. Harry Ettmuller served in the United States Army in Vietnam. He was assigned to the American Forces Vietnam Network in what turned out to be a very dangerous assignment. Harry, when did you enlist in the Army?
I enlisted in January of 1963 because I had turned 18 in November of 1962.
Did you expect that you would end up in Vietnam?
Well, at that time, Vietnam wasn't really on the burner. Cuban Missile Crisis, et cetera, et cetera. And there really wasn't a lot as far as information going on about Vietnam when I joined.
Harry, how much time passed between enlistment and deployment to Vietnam?
About 2.5 years before I went to Vietnam the first time. I was deployed from Armed Forces Korea Network and from Pusan, where I was chief engineer, to South Vietnam to assist four other individuals that were pulled out of Korea and Okinawa to set up a school for Vietnamese military to learn the aspects of installation, maintenance, and repair of a television station.
So your role was primarily engineering?
Strictly engineering, yes.
How did you end up at the AFVN station in Hue?
While in Vietnam the first time, we were grenaded, and fortunately that was my day off from teaching. So the other individuals that were with me ended up getting Purple Hearts because they were wounded. A grenade was thrown in the back of the truck. How I got to Hue, I went back to Korea, the end of November of 1966, and immediately put in a 1049. At that time was the catch-all for whatever you wanted to do in the military. It was a DD-1049.
You asked for a reassignment to Hue.
No, I asked for a reassignment to AFVN in Vietnam, but I was assigned to the 1st Signal Brigade in Vung Tau when I came back to Vietnam. So then I was reassigned to Saigon headquarters for AFVN, and I was there less than a month and was selected to go to the city of Hue, which was close to the DMZ, to set up a television station.
So when did you arrive in Hue?
Let me see now. Approximately March, probably about the end of April.
And Hue, which is about 75 miles south of the DMZ, had only AFVN television services, not radio?
At the time, yes. We were fixing to become what's classified as a Class A station, which means we would have radio and television, but found out many, many, many years later that the State Department was really instrumental in pushing and getting a television station in the city of Hue.
Harry, would you explain why the State Department was so interested in having a television station in Hue, Vietnam?
Propaganda. Psychological warfare.
AFVN television was primarily as a propaganda piece?
No.
For the South Vietnamese?
AFVN was there for the purpose of information and entertainment of U.S. troops and allied forces in South Vietnam. It also is a major propaganda tool because it showed American culture, and believe it or not, two of the biggest programs that the Vietnamese enjoyed was Batman and Combat.
Harry, Saigon was about 500 miles south of the demilitarized zone. Hue was only about 70 miles south of the DMZ. Was it a much more dangerous place than Saigon?
Yeah. Nobody would come up there. And if they needed to come up there, they would come up, be there a couple hours, and jump on a plane and fly back to Saigon. Nobody wanted to spend any time up there because, as they told us, it's too dangerous.
Harry, you felt like it was very dangerous in Hue. Well, it turned out that it was, in fact, dangerous in Hue. The facilities were overrun in February of 68. Were you there when that happened?
Yes, I was there. Myself, Sergeant Anderson, who was the N2IC, and then we had five Marines.
How were the AFVN facilities in Hue overrun?
Overrun by a lack of leadership, planning, and plain stupidity. We had security to a certain degree, but unfortunately, the weapons that we were given, some didn't work. You had problems with them. We were issued M14s. Nobody was using M14s. Everybody had M16s. Trying to find ammunition was difficult. Couldn't get magazines for them. Nobody would come the way because it was too dangerous. But yet they wouldn't let us have the equipment as far as firepower that was supposed to be designated for each of these wagons, and we never got it.
Were the facilities overrun by Viet Cong or NVA?
Well, that's kind of a moot point as far as Viet Cong and NVA. I've spoken with people that have come back from Vietnam, and basically, to them, it was all Viet Cong, but it was NVA.
So what happened during the attack?
We were under assault from the 31st of January all the way through the 5th of February.
Harry, was this a ground attack, a mortar attack, a combination of different attacks?
It was a combination of everything. Mortar, probing. It was to the point where they were throwing grenades in. We were shooting them. They were shooting back at us. I'd been wounded once already with grenade fragments, and it was pretty terse. We got a lot of sniper fire, a lot of mortar rounds, and just plain. And then they started with the RPGs, and that's where things went downhill really fast after that.
How many people were in the radio?
There were nine of us.
Was it just the nine of you that defended against this attack, or did the American or South Vietnamese military come to your aid at all?
Nobody came to our aid for the simple reason that we had no field radio, which we should have had. That was neglected by the new commanding officer. And he relied on the telephone, which basically when you go through basic training, that's one of the things that they teach you about, is to cut communications of your enemy so they can't be in contact. We had no contact. And that's the way it was.
So five of you were taken to a POW camp?
Up to the Ho Chi Minh Trail and over into North Vietnam. And then eventually, over the years, ended up in Hanoi.
And how many years total were you a POW, Harry?
Well, let's put it this way. 61 months, 2 days, and 10 hours, which was a little more than 5 years.
How many years after your release did you remain in the U.S. Army?
Well, I got released in March of 73, and I got out in July of 77.
Well, Sergeant Harry Ettmuller, thank you for your service.
Well, thank you, sir.
The Red Cross had volunteers in Vietnam who performed many important roles in providing aid and comfort to U.S. military personnel. But how are they connected to AFVN?
Well, Mike, the Red Cross girls did do a lot of good in Vietnam. And one of the things they did was visit hospitals. They would also go to the forward operating bases and spend time with the guys out in the field. And unless you were there, it's hard to understand how nice it was to see a woman. The military in Vietnam was pretty much all men. Those field visits by the Red Cross girls really boosted morale. As far as AFVN was concerned, a few of the Red Cross girls would come to the radio station and host their own radio program, and they would dedicate songs to the guys they met in the hospitals and in the field. We have a very short recording of only one of them from AFEN in Da Nang. I wish we had a lot more, but we don't.
Well, if that's all we've got, that's all we've got. But let's play it.
And this is Charlotte, where your Red Cross girls from Freedom Hill bringing you Tunes for the Troops. This hour, we're bringing you sounds by the Vanilla Fudge, Union Gap, Doors, Ed Ames, and the Letterman. St. Louis Blues by Ella Fitzgerald is first today. It goes to Gus of 1st MP's B Battery. We wish him a speedy recovery.
Dean Kratchmer was among the 3.4 million Americans who served in the Southeast Asian Theater during the war. Dean Kratchmer, what did you do in Vietnam?
I served there in 1969 with the Coast Guard.
Coast Guard?
Yeah.
You were a long way from home. What were you doing over there?
Well, we had to make sure that those Viet Cong were wearing their little red life jackets. Mike, that was kind of our purpose.
No, I'm kidding. I actually know quite a bit about the Coast Guard. My father served 24 years after graduating from the academy. My brother serves, and my son is in the Coast Guard. So I actually know a fair amount. And the Coast Guard, most people don't know this, the Coast Guard has served in every war in American history since it was established in 1790 as the Revenue Marine Service and later the Revenue Cutter Service.
Yeah, it is the oldest continuous naval force in the United States.
8,000 Coast Guardsmen served in Vietnam. There were 67 casualties, 60 injuries, and 7 fatalities.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do in Vietnam?
We were part of market time. We were part of Coast Guard Squadron 3. There were 5 what they called high endurance cutters, long cutters that could, you know, make the ocean voyages. And they served more or less as motherships and gunfire support. My particular specialty was radar. So I sat in CIC in the air conditioning all day behind the bridge and all night. And our purpose was voice communications. Of course, we had to we were trying to discern who the bad guys were, who was trying to make a run for the coast, hostile intent, and then we did gunfire support.
Did you enlist in the Coast Guard to avoid Vietnam?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Without a doubt, I thought my chances would be incredibly good not to go.
So you get to boot camp, and you have no expectation of going to Vietnam, but before long, you were in Vietnam. What was the path there?
Yeah, forming company is the first part of boot camp in the Coast Guard, and I think it's the same in a lot of boot camps, where they really work on your mind and keep you up all night and march you around. And then about the fourth day in, I think, because forming company is about a week long, they herded us all into a classroom there at the training center at Alameda. And sat us down in front of one of those old Bell and Howell projectors that started up, you know, flip, 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 and it started up. And all of a sudden on the screen, can you see, it was this funny word, Nung Lai. And this was the name of the video, I guess the film back then. Nung Lai, the Coast Guard in Vietnam. And at that point in time, everybody in the room turned and looked at each other. And we all know that recruiters lie. But, boy, everybody thought, oh, man, you know, what is... And then we watched the film, and then the lights came up, and the guy walks up to the front, whoever was running the projector, and he says, I want you guys all to know that 80% of you will be in Vietnam by the end of the year.
And so what ship were you on in Vietnam?
The Coast Guard cutter Sebago. It was a World War II vessel, 255-foot long. She was... had 1 5-inch gun forward and a whole bunch of 50 calibers.
What was the primary mission of the Sebago in Vietnam?
Our big thing was board and search and gunfire support. And those are the two big things. We also had a role in the counterinsurgency strategy. We worked a lot with civil action programs.
Was the Sebago painted white or gray while serving in Vietnam?
Standard white.
Okay, because I know the 82-footers were all gray.
Yeah, they changed the color over there. It was a couple of them had gotten into some tight spots, and they realized it was because they were looking like they had lights on them, especially moonlit nights. They were stood out. The larger cutters actually had a name that the Viet Cong gave them, something about the White Ghost. We were steam electric. We made absolutely no noise. We only had about an 8-foot draft, so we could just slip in on them, especially on a moonless night. Slip right into a harbor, noiseless, and they really wouldn't know we were there until we'd already opened up on them.
Do you remember listening to American Forces Vietnam Network while in Vietnam?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Do you remember the program Chicken Man?
Oh, yeah, buddy. Buck, 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 buck! Chicken Man, yeah, he's everywhere. We had a lot of laughs. Yeah, that was a big piece of home. There's not a lot of funny stuff going on, so it was really wonderful to have that. Yeah, and actually, every morning in Combat Information Center where we work, we monitored about 6 frequencies, various emergency frequencies, tactical frequencies, and the little speakers were up in various corners of the compartment. And somebody would always start it out. It was usually like about 4 or 5 in the morning, and somebody would start. Somebody would do the buck, 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 and then everybody at every duty station in that area would start clocking back. You know, he's everywhere. He's everywhere. And every time someone said he's everywhere, he was in a different place in your ears. Everybody participated every morning. It was really funny.
Without disclosing anything that's still classified, what was your most interesting mission aboard the Sebago?
It was the last day of August in 69. My birthday, my 21st birthday was going to be the next day. And we were in the Gulf of Thailand between Phu Quoc Island and the mainland, right where the Cambodian border hit the Gulf of Thailand. I decoded a voice message from whoever, I guess most men from An Toi, that gave us a position of a downed Air Force pilot. We called immediately the bridge, and I started to plot it on the geographic plot, And I looked up, and I didn't hear, you didn't hear him come in, but the old man was standing right in front of me. I mean, just, you know, 2 feet away. He says, "Where is he?" And I said, "He's over the line, Captain. He's in Cambodia." And there was a... excuse me. It was a kind of an emotional time. And he looked at me, and he says, "We don't give a damn." There's an American down, and we're going after him. So we we got range and bearing, and we didn't even look at the chart. He called out which way we were going, told the bridge, and we headed out across in the Gulf of Thailand. By the time we got there, it was getting dark, and we were in a real bad storm. Rain was coming down, sideways rain. We dropped a launch. We had and sent him ashore, and the guy had managed the Air Force pilot. It was one of those pilots, one of those little tiny Air Force spotter planes, a little gray. I don't even know the manufacturer, but like little tiny Piper Cups, little plane. He had gone down. When he knew he had been hit, he basically just pointed it towards the coast. But he had managed. He had a broken leg. He had managed to crawl his way through the jungle for about a mile on his hands and knees, basically. To the beach where he hit at the beach. The beaches there look like the tropical beaches in the Caribbean, where there's a beach and then up 100 feet or so from the shore there's a tree line, real thick. So he hit in the tree line and we came along board there. I wasn't on the launch, but our guys found him real quick. He flashed his light and of course they got him. They threw him in a Stokes litter and brought him back. I helped carry him over the rail, and we put him inside. It was a really incredible feeling that we had basically done. And of course, we hauled out of there because we didn't want to get caught. We didn't want to have an international incident. We were in hostile territories, waters. Cambodia was hostile. They didn't like us at all.
Now, Cambodia was neutral at that time, right?
Yeah, supposedly, yeah. But we all knew what that was about because before even the end of the war, they had found that 80% of the war material came in by sea at Sihanoukville.
So what do you think would have happened to that pilot had you and the crew of the Sebago not rescued him in Cambodia?
Well, I think he probably would have ended up as a prisoner of war of the Viet Cong. I think they would have handed him over because they were, you know, the border was like right there. So, and they were more than complicit in the war.
And what would have happened had the Cambodian Navy confronted the Sebago?
Well, the captain's been dead for about 3 years, so I don't think it would hurt to say that. He would have duped him out. So he would have definitely. We would have fought it out with him. There would have been no question whatsoever.
Did the captain or the ship get an award citation for that rescue?
Yeah, the Cutter Sebago and the men, the crew of the Cutter Sebago, as a result of this and of other service to the country during the war over there, was awarded a medal from the Vietnamese Armed Forces called the Republic of Vietnam Armed Forces Meritorious Unit Citation. And the old man, they gave him a Bronze Star.
Well, my father was CO of several ships throughout his career, and the one thing that I remember him saying more than any other was, there's a fine line between a medal and a court-martial.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if we'd duked it out with him down there, then, God knows, you know, with a neutral country, and yeah. Yeah, we would have probably all been in the brig.
This was a couple years before you arrived in Vietnam, but do you remember the Point Welcome incident?
Oh, yeah. I think everybody that went to Vietnam knows about Point Welcome. I think most of the guys that were in the Coast Guard at that time knew about Point Welcome. I became aware of it in boot camp.
What's the story?
It was in August of 66. The Coast Guard had been in country and had been in Da Nang about a year at that point in time. And it was a normal 3-day patrol. About 3:40 in the morning, they noticed that a C-130, the forward air controller for that area, had circled overhead and had dropped two flares on them. Now, that's not a good sign. That means that you're a hostile and they're lighting you up. So it wasn't just a an instant of a time, and all of a sudden we hit rockets, hit the bridge, killed the helmsman, wounded the executive officer, and on the first pass, plus the commanding officer was down on the main deck, and the flare gun was on basically the bridge wing per se. It was kind of not much of a bridge wing, but right there at the door. And he headed up the ladder to get that, and he had just reached into the box to shoot another flare. The Air Force jet that had been vectored down, not knowing who the point welcome was, let loose with some rockets and 20-millimeter aircraft machine guns, and he took it right in the center. He was a young guy, Lieutenant J.G., I believe, at that point, and he was killed. This went on for about 50 minutes, and before it was all over, there were two dead, and absolutely everybody else on board was wounded.
The commanding officer of the Point Welcome was Lieutenant J.G. David Charles Brostrom. He was my father's roommate at the Coast Guard Academy.
It's a tragedy. Tragedy, something like that. It's bad enough war, but to be taken out by your own forces is never a good thing.
Yeah, he died on August 11th, 1966 in Vietnam.
Yeah.
I was born by then, but I didn't know him. Never met him, but I have visited his name on the wall several times in Washington. Panel 9E.
It gets a little heavy. Yeah, I got some guys I talk to down there too. Once a year, go down. We lost some really fine guys over there. We're a small service, so we didn't lose that many, I guess, all things considered.
Dean Kretschmer, thank you for your service.
Well, you're entirely welcome, sir. We'd do it again.
Semper Paratus.
Semper Paratus to you, sir.
This is the sound of Network.
Good evening to you. Your brother's back at 9:05, and we're going to light some fires from Boss Radio.
And when I see the sign that points one way, the lot we used to pass by.
In the Four Tops, this is an AFEN double flop with Shango and Day After Day.
Day after day, more people come to L.A. Shh, don't you tell anybody, the whole place tripping away.
Where can we go when there's no San Francisco? Shh, better get ready to tie up the boat in Idaho.
Do you know the swim? You better learn quick, Jim.
Those who don't know the swim, better sing the hymn.
Tuna at the bowl, fine fillet of mussel.
Ooh, what can you do with a bushel of wet gold?
Day after day, more people come to L.A.
Shh, don't you tell anybody, the whole place shaking away.
There she goes.
Where can we go when there's no San Francisco?
Jangle for 1969, day after day, more people move to L.A. 910 with your brother at 809-6337 in the city.
The R&R program is a great chance to enjoy the Far East. It is also your chance to buy many exotic souvenirs and other items at a reduced price. When making these purchases, however, it's best to keep a few things in mind. goods of any type made in Communist China, North Korea, or North Vietnam cannot be imported to the United States. These regulations prevent Communist countries from obtaining American currency through the sale of goods. Items from these countries find their way into the markets of the international cities available to you on R&R. When you shop in a local market, be sure to obtain a certificate of origin, guaranteeing the item of purchase is not of Communist origin. This certificate ensures that your souvenir or gift will not be stopped by customs. Have a good time on R&R, but don't buy something you can't keep. Remember, check the origin of every item you purchase.
Mr. Bill Rungsted, our Finky weatherman, 100 degrees. I don't believe it. Premiered on the Cavalcade program at 8:05 yesterday morning with the good Sergeant Joe Rowland. This is Sonny Charles in Black Pearl.
Hey, my
Black Pearl, precious little girl, let me put you up where you
American Power Poll Playlist from the American Forces Vietnam Network, Sonny Charles in Black Pearl. 914 with your brother, and hold those phone calls, ladies and gentlemen. It's 96337, draw 40 in the city.
Solid gold.
1966 with the Mamas and the Papas. From 1966, from the Mamas and the Papas. I saw her again. 96337, draw 40 in the city. Please, please hold those phone calls. We just can't fill telephone requests tonight. Can't do it. You know, over at the 1st Marine Air Wing, we have a place called the Golden Gate USO. And it's a place that you go and get out of the way from the idea of the old mom and you know what. And on a special day, the 26th of May, they have a play lined up starring Liz Layton. Yes, beautiful Liz is starring in a comedy called What Is a Nice Girl Like You Doing in a Place Like This? Ta-ta. Well, you can imagine it's going to be quite a show. And it's at 12:30 on the 26th of May. Be there, baby.
Keep happening.
Jose Feliciano, Molly Bird Drive. 96337 in the city. It's 918 with your brother, and it's a happening.
Sunday morning, woke up yawning, filled the pool for a swim. Pull down the hand and look in the glasses to see if I was in. Went up the stairs and kissed my woman to make her come alive. Cause with 15 kids and a family on the stage, I gotta go for a Sunday ride. 15 kids and a family on the stage, I gotta go for a Sunday drive.
Jose, Molly Bird Drive, Pit Drive. Lighting those fires from the American Forces Vietnam Network, your brother, Marine Sergeant Harry Simon.
AFBN, the ever-loving color.
America. I need a job.
Speaking about bad moons.
Hey, man, let's stop and take a look at some of the psychotic reactions to Mary Jane. In 1965, the World Health Organization report described the effects of pot as carelessness, distortion of sensation or perception, impairment of judgment or memory, and the creation of an error of confusion. The drug can also dangerously affect the nervous system and the brain, man. So, like, when you're asleep, do you want a hothead on guard duty? Think about it.
Yester Groovin with the Lemon Pipers, my great tambourine. It's 9:25 in the city. Brothers taking those requests at 96337 drawer 40. Hold those phone calls.
Drop your silver in my tambourine. Help a poor man fill a pretty dream. Give me pennies, I'll take anything. My green tambourine.
Our lovely Sergeant Joe Rowland just made a purchase of a yellow tambourine to match his socks. C-130 pilots up there flying around in the air. New flights have been added to the schedule of the aerial port here in Da Nang. Now effective flight 856 for Benoit will depart at 11:25. Flight 751 Alpha for Quang Tri departs at 11:35. And at 14:05, flight 750 Alpha departs for An Hoa and Quang Ngai. At 18:45, flight 875 Alpha departs for An K. For further information, call Da Nang Main 3848 and enjoy your flight as you fly the war-torn skies of the Military Airlift Command. The Guess Who out of Canada are these eyes.
These eyes cry every night for you. These arms long to hold you. Again, these eyes
the sounds of the Yes Who in these eyes on the American forces, the Endow Network.
These eyes.
Finding those fighters in Northern I Corps. Boss Radio, your brother, Marine Sergeant Harry Simon, on a happening. 9:33 in the city. Poor old Larry Grant, who's got a chicken kicking show in the morning here at 11:05 on the Big VN, just walked in the studio and he's got tears running down his eyes. And Harry, my chickens won't lay any eggs.
Double gold.
Likes kids, but doesn't like to lay eggs. Syndicate of Sound, Yes, a Groove in 66. Hey, little girl, you like kids? I like kids.
Hey, little girl, you don't have to hide nothing no more. You didn't do nothing that hadn't been done before. She thought she'd get away with you going out on me. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
Million men were drafted between August 1964 and March 1973. Scotty Brink was one who answered that call with service in the Army, where he was ultimately assigned to AFVN in Saigon. Scotty, what did you do before you were drafted?
Well, before I was drafted, I was a KHJ in Los Angeles. For 4 years before that, I've been at WIBG in Philadelphia, and I'd also spent a little time as the last afternoon drive jock on KYW.
So you were on the air at KHJ when you received your draft notice?
Yes, that would be accurate. That's when my friends and neighbors selected me, yes.
And was that a pleasant invitation to join, or did you not really want to go?
Well, I was 24 years old at the time, and my career was just literally soaring. I mean, it was almost breathtaking for me. Everything was just going so well. And that radio station was probably about the most desirable place to be in the country at the time. And I'd been there only a few months when I got this notice. And so, no, it wasn't necessarily welcome timing.
So they sent you off to Vietnam in what year?
I went to Vietnam in 67, and I actually volunteered to go to Vietnam. I was at Fort Hood, Texas, sitting in a G2 section and thinking, boy, I'm spending these 2 years doing nothing of any value to anybody. And so I volunteered to go to Vietnam to go to Armed Forces Radio and TV. And I went, although when I got there, I found out I wasn't actually assigned to Armed Forces Radio and TV. I was assigned to 25th MI. But anyway, it's a long story, but I finally got myself into Saigon and hooked up with Armed Forces Radio and TV and spent the next year there.
And was it your prior radio experience that caused the Army to want to station you at the radio station in Saigon?
Yeah. Yeah, when they realized what my track record was and what my resume was, they seemed a lot more interested.
So what was your primary job in Vietnam?
There's no one specific job you do. You might do a regular program every day, but you still have other duties as well, and that's pretty much at the whim of whoever your commander is. But my primary jobs were doing the Go Show, which I literally created because they didn't have that kind of a thing when I got there. They had really no rock and roll on the radio station. That's the first thing that struck me when I got there was the average troop age was like 19 and a half years old, and yet the music was pretty much Guy Lombardo and Lawrence Welk and things of that nature, with the exception of the Chris Noel show and one oldie show that an Army sergeant named Ron Nobleson had at night. And so we talked a lot and kicked it around, and we started this Go show. And that was quite a phenomenon when it came on the air, because there was nothing like it. And we opened up to the dedications and requests. And you know those mailbags they bring you when they did mail call in Vietnam? They're about 4 feet high, and they're really huge. Well, I used to get one of those just about every day just for that show, from people back home, from guys in the field. And so it really kind of changed the course of Armed Forces Radio.
The letters that came from the States, were they dedicating songs to servicemen that were in Southeast Asia?
Yes, yes, indeed.
What kind of dedications and requests were sent from the States to the servicemen? What was the typical theme of that?
Oh, usually it's to my honey or to my, you know, my husband or my boyfriend or that kind of thing.
Did you have a lot of autonomy in selecting the music on your program, Scotty?
We have what they call radio units. No, I'd say autonomy, absolutely not. If the song was on the radio unit, which was set by Armed Forces Radio in Los Angeles, if the song was on there, you could play it. Otherwise, the regulations were you didn't touch it. Now, of the stuff that was on there, I could play anything I wanted. I played things that the guys would request. It was pretty much an all-request kind of a show. And a couple of the big songs, of course, were Coming Home Soldier and We Got to Get Out of This Place. Those were the two most requested songs during that whole thing. But it was really their show.
We Got to Get Out of This Place by the Animals.
Yeah, right. That was the number one requested song.
We interviewed Don Salter, who was an infantryman in Vietnam, and that was the theme song of his unit. They sang it together.
I can believe that.
The approved playlist, was it based on popularity or was it based on the message of the song? Because there were a lot of anti-war songs on the charts back then.
They were pretty careful at not letting too many of those slip in there, but most of the time I don't think they realized what the lyrics really meant to people who listened to them. And so, yeah, some of those things got through.
What kind of off-air responsibilities did you have?
Well, that varied depending on the time, anywhere from guard duty to during the Tet Offensive to, I mean, just about anything that had to be done around the station. But there were a lot of people working there, so it's not like you spent your time doing, you didn't do KP or anything like that, but just had other duties. And I can't really specifically remember, but you had to put some time in, you know, preparing your program. And in my case, with all that mail, I probably spent most of my time going through that.
Well, you know, I didn't really have much of a social life in Saigon. I did what I had to do and either slept on a cot in the engineering department or went back to the billet and kind of kept to myself. I just didn't associate with anybody except the microphone. You know, and
well, gee, Harry, you missed so much fun.
Yeah. I was just trying to avoid being shot at. And
well, you know what? I think we were all doing that one.
Yeah.
You know, of course, that when we were all at AFVN, we were literally one of the top targets in the entire country.
Yeah, I'm all aware of that.
I mean, they didn't talk about that around AFVN. Of course, not many people, I think, even knew that, how big a target we were. I think everybody probably figured we were probably a pretty big one. But it was a real desirable thing on Charlie's list.
Did you wear a sidearm when you did your shift?
No, but I had a rifle and a flak vest. I wore a flak vest most of the time after Tet, but there was always a rifle within reach.
And you were prepared to use it if necessary?
Yeah. Fortunately, never did have to use it in the studio.
Right. Well, AFVN studios were attacked during the war.
Yeah, that was a little bit later on, and during the Tet Offensive, the studios in a way were totally overrun, and station disappeared.
Scotty, do you remember this?
Scotty Brink, 93 KHJ.
Boss Radio proudly presents the gala opening of the Beatles' Yellow Submarine tonight in Westwood, 7.
Whether I'm right.
No, but I'd love to have a copy of it.
Oh.
Actually, I do remember. As a matter of fact, I know exactly what to talk about. I remember that Yellow Submarine premiere so well. So vividly, because that was really an incredible night, as a matter of fact.
Well, tell us a little bit about it. And also, was that before or after your service in Vietnam?
That was after my service in Vietnam. I was just back.
Okay. So
I'd spent a few months in New York working for the same company, and then they transferred me back to KHJ, and I believe it was October of 68 there. And that Yellow Submarine premiere was shortly after that.
The KHJ folks used to send reel-to-reel programs to AFEN in Saigon.
I know. I got them to do that.
Tell us about that.
Just I think Scott Manning got you Chicken Man and everything else that you had, like things like that you had over there from WCFL and Dick Orkin and that group. But when I was over there, I called some of the – I used to call programmed – or not called. Actually, I did call sometimes because I had a phone in my room, but that's another whole story. I contacted people at radio stations and said, hey, it's, you know, people like – I had one of the, originally one of the people just to do IDs and so forth, that they started sending tapes as well, which is really nice.
Well, as a matter of fact, it was appreciated because we were, as disc jockeys in Vietnam, a little bit isolated as to what was really happening back in the States. And if it wasn't for Billboard or the AFEN Music Popularity Survey, we wouldn't have anything to be able to reference to. And the tapes that came in from radio stations such as KHJ were a really excellent opportunity to be able to actually, in fact, hear and listen to real radio in the States, and also provided us a resource of being able to recreate and steal some ideas.
Well, that's part of radio, is knowing what's going on and then adapting something somebody else does to your own ideas.
Sure. Are you aware of any of those tapes that were sent to AFEN having ever made it to air?
No, they didn't when I was there because I think there were. I don't think the military people wanted that to happen. And then I remember bringing the subject up. Wouldn't it be great if we run little short air checks of guys on the air and, you know, for that familiar taste from back home, and met with a pretty negative reaction from the powers that be.
Well, Scotty, where did you billet in Saigon?
Well, a couple of different places. First, it was a place called the Ambassador. Then there was the Cholon Annex. And what they were old, kind of run-down hotels in Vietnam that they had turned into military billets. And so I was at the Ambassador, the Cholon Annex, and I think that was and one other. I can't remember now what it was.
Well, Scotty Brink, thank you for your service.
Well, thank you, and it's really nice to have these things remembered in such a good light, and I'm glad that Vietnam veterans are finally being treated a little bit more like they should have been in the first place. I never had a personal problem with that, but I sure know a lot of guys who did.
Well, that's one of the reasons that we're doing this, is because the Vietnam veterans, when they came home, they were not given a thank you, they were not given a welcome, and it was much deserved.
With your brother, Marine Sergeant Harry Simons, as we light those fires at Northern I Corps. Kind of gonna, well, I'll tell you what, I demand you take a vacation.
It's Mod, it's Mad, it's Tokyo for R&R. From Ueno to Shinjuku, from Tokyo Tower to the resorts of Nikko, it's a mod world of Tokyo calling you when R&R comes around. Take a trip nonstop from Saigon to the largest city in the world. Shop now for Christmas, electronics, cameras, pearls, and silks. You'll go mad going mod in Tokyo, where they say, let it all hang out. And where they say, saki to me. Saki to me. Saki to me. Saki to me.
Now you know I want you to take that vacation. Yeah. Give me some of that good loving, huh? Is Crazy Elephant.
From the land of Georgia to the Gulf Stream border to California, I'm gonna spend my life on the night of day.
Give me the golden every night.
I know it's all right now.
Give me the golden. Take it all right.
You know it's all right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, the USO Overseas Entertainment Committee presents a country western spectacular. George Wynn and the Bluegrass Partners is a heading our way, folks, with a 6-day tour of the Da Nang, Chulai, and Quang Tri areas. Why, y'all can't miss out on the opportunity to swing to the music of George Wynn and the Bluegrass Partners. So hop on the old pony and head on down to your USO and find all about it. About that country western spectacular. Think we ought to tell Larry Grant about it? I don't think so. He'll have all his chickens down there. Grassroots 67. Things I should have said. That's not me, baby.
I didn't cry. I just stood and watched her say goodbye. She closed the door, said, I don't want to see you anymore. I should have said to her that maybe would have changed her mind this day.
Now I know why the boss always gets mad at me. The things I'm supposed to say, I never do. I'm 51.
These power plays are hit bound this week on AFEN's Power Pole. This is Music Power now.
Inbound on the All-American Power Pole playlist with your brother in the Big 8-5, Black Pearl and Sonny Charles. 87 heavies in the city with Marine Sergeant Harry Simons lighting those fires.
Here is your chance to cash in on a good thing. The Overseas Savings Deposit Program is the best way for you to put away a little of that extra cash you're making. Good rate of interest. It's the best offered by anyone, any place, any time. 10% compounded quarterly. That's hard to beat in any financial circle and better than any stateside bank can offer. Check with your finance office and get the details on the Overseas Savings Deposit Program. You wouldn't want to miss out on a good thing.
One of the biggest songs to make the charts, oh, in a long, long time. But guess who out of Canada?
These eyes cry every night for you. These arms
forget 96337 in the city. AFN detachment number 2, Da Nang. Let's light some more fires, people.
This is the sound of fun. American Forces Vietnam Network.
Some old goof just walked in and stole the clock, but I know it's time to say goodbye. It happens every time we just get going. Oh, well. Doing the whole doggone thing over again tomorrow night on Tuesday, number 3, June 1969. the faith, ladies and gentlemen, remember that day shall roll along. 365 days in a year. And one of them's gonna be yours. Your brother's gonna leave you with that word. And that word has been the same since the beginning. And it's gonna be the same until the end. Ladies and gentlemen, that word has got to be... really. Doing our thing on the hour at 2200. News follows next on the American Forces Vietnam Network.
Gary W. Gears was one of the better-known AFVN announcers. Right, Harry?
That's right. Gary was recognized by name and by voice. He had an outstanding voice. And he was, with no doubt, the most recognizable voice on AFVN. In the States, he was the voice of Eyewitness News on WLS Television in Chicago. He did voice work for radio networks around the world, and he voiced a lot of television commercials in the States, including Sears department stores, Dial Soap, and many others.
Well, let's hear that fantastic set of pipes from this September 18th, 1968 newscast on AFVN.
This is AFVN News on the Hour.
Good evening, this is Army PFC Gary W. Gears with these reports from major American networks, wire services, and military sources. A warning from the Soviet Union to West Germany. Russia says it will act to curb what it calls dangerous activities of neo-Nazism and militarism in West Germany. Russia has at least 20 army divisions along the German border, but the warning avoided the word invasion. The United States may send about 12,000 combat troops and airmen to Europe early next year on a temporary basis. The men would take part in Allied maneuvers, which would involve between 20,000 and 40,000 U.S. servicemen. The move is aimed at assuring NATO members and the Russians that the United States is prepared to counter Soviet pressures in Eastern Europe. North Vietnam says no third parties need apply for jobs as mediators in the war. This apparently refers to UN Secretary General Tont, who has offered his help. That's the situation as North Vietnam and U.S. negotiators meet again in Paris today. Little hope of breaking the deadlock is seen in that 22nd session. In North Vietnam, Air Force F-4 Phantom crews from the 8th Tactical Fighter Wing destroyed or damaged 5 enemy supply barges and caused 7 sustained fires and 2 large secondary explosions when striking the craft 35 miles northwest and 33 miles northwest of Dong Hoi yesterday. For more details, Air Force Sergeant Boyd Loudridge files his report from Tonson at Air Base.
A truck park 46 miles west-northwest of Dong Hoi was the target for Phantom crews from the 555th Tactical Fighter Squadron, assigned to the 432nd Tactical Reconnaissance Wing. The crews reported causing 5 large sustained fires and a secondary explosion. In South Vietnam, Air Force F-4 Phantom crews from the 366th Tactical Fighter Wing at Da Nang Air Base struck against enemy troop concentrations and mortar positions in Quang Tri Province, 20 miles north-northwest of Quang Tri City. The crews reported destroying 16 bunkers and 2 mortar positions.
The world's most powerful communication satellite is to be launched tonight from Cape Kennedy. It will double the space-borne television and telephone links across the Atlantic. And that's the news compiled from major American news services and military sources in Saigon. This is Army PFC Gary W. Gears reporting.
AFVN worldwide news coverage. Heard every hour on the hour.
This tribute to our Vietnam veterans is proudly sponsored by the Retirement Planners, Penair Federal Credit Union, Milton Dodge, Joe Patty Seafood, and Gulf Power. Be sure to listen tomorrow afternoon from 4 to 6 for our final episode of AFVN, The GI's Companion, here on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. We'll meet the Hollywood sweetheart who went on a nightly date with thousands of GIs. And we'll share the secret reason the Americans in Vietnam were singing Christmas carols in April.
Team 30, WEBY, Milton, Pensacola, Gulf Breeze, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio.